Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to live your life by design in 2009? Well, then sit back, relax, and enjoy an empowering conversation to advance and enhance your life. And now, your host, Miss Kathy Holloway Hill and Mr. Tony Lamont.
Hello, listeners. You have Kathy Holloway Hill with you this evening.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
And we are so happy to have you join us, and we have a great show for you this evening. We have some announcements, and I think you're going to be very pleased with what we have lined up for you. So I'm going to just jump right in because we have a very full schedule this evening, and I want to make sure that everyone has an opportunity to get their questions in because, as you know, this is the final closeout of our Women's Relationship Wednesday series, and it has been overwhelmingly popular, and I definitely intend to be bringing it back in early 2010, so stay tuned for that. But right now, I just want to tell you about a fabulous announcement. We're going to be kicking off our first phase of an outrageous book campaign that I'm going to be focusing on. And we have so many special surprises and gifts in store for you. And what this is going to be, it's going to be a 3-month period of fabulous interviews and previews of the gifts, the free gifts, yes, free gifts, that we will be giving away on the big day, which is December 10th. And that's the day that we're going to be actually promoting Emotional Bailout. And as we go through, I'm going to be explaining more and more about how this process is going to work. But for right now, all you need to know is that we are kicking off our first phase, and we're going to be partnering with some fabulous guests. And once we get to the end of the process on December the 10th, when you purchase the book on that day, you are going to have access to so many wonderful gifts from all my partners. And I'm going to be bringing my partners on throughout this 3-month period, and you're going to be able to hear directly from them. You're going to hear all the fabulous things they're doing, and these are some heavy hitters. I mean, these are some people that are really doing a lot of things. They have strong credentials. They have 7-figure businesses that they have really built their business to a tremendous level, and they're going to be able to share their secrets with you, share their resources with you, and it's going to be free. So this is something that you absolutely don't want to miss. You want to stay close, stay in tune, stay in touch, because I want to make sure that you get all the information. And a lot of the different coaches that we're going to be featuring and highlighting are life transformation coaches, financial repair coaches, wealth building coaches, business coaches, relationship coaches, health and wellness, psychiatrists, just so many different partners in the areas of self, health, and wealth. And Tony, I tell you, some of these people have really been, they've just been doing it. I mean, they've been featuring on NBC, ABC, Fox, Tonight Show, Oprah, USA Today, Black Enterprise, Cosmo, Essence, and just associated with so many celebrities, just too many to count. So I tell you, Tony, this is going to really be a fabulous campaign, and I think our listeners are going to really be excited for the benefits and the free gifts that they're going to be able to get and have access to these fabulous individuals that are part of this campaign, the partners.
Well, and that's the one thing that everybody should really pay attention to is the fact that not only will they get a wealth of information with the show topics and the conversations going on the show, but just for becoming a part of the process, they'll get an opportunity to get some wonderful gifts and services that'll be unequaled or unmatched anywhere. So it will be an exciting time for everybody involved, and I'm really looking forward to it also.
Absolutely. And the guest that we actually have on tonight, she is a tremendous value, and I am working with her, and I'm hoping and praying that she's going to join us in our joint venture partnership, because she is going to be a tremendous asset. And Just to give you a little bit about her background, because I'm anxious to bring her on the line, her name is Lori Pun, and I want to make sure I'm pronouncing that right, and I'm sure you will let me know when she comes on the line here. But Lori is absolutely fabulous. She has a tremendous bio. She has a private practice in family and divorce and mediation, and she's a best-selling author of her book entitled Persuasion. She's a well-known relationship communications expert and a TV host of I Own New York. And that's really interesting. She's appeared on many different TV shows, Fox News, Good Day New York, CNN, Weekend Today, Rachel Ray, just so. Hello? Tony, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here. It sounds like it's cutting out just a little bit, but I could hear you.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and open the mic to bring Lori on the line. And Lori, are you there?
Here I am.
Great. It's so exciting to have you on here with us tonight.
It's my pleasure.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm sure you heard my little intro about kicking off this campaign. And I am hoping and praying that you decide to come on board with us, because I know my listeners are going to absolutely love you.
Well, I'll use my own instant persuasion technique, which is one of my rules of the 35 rules in my book, and that is to delay your response. And
right.
Whenever someone puts you on the spot, it's really important to have a line in your back pocket. Which
right.
is, let me think about it, I'll get back to you by, and you insert your own self-imposed deadline. So here I'll say to you, today is Wednesday, let me think about it, I'll get back to you by Friday.
Absolutely.
There you
I
go.
I love it.
There
I love
go.
It.
But that's what instant persuasion is all about. It's these real-life, everyday moments, and there's no harm intended from either side. It's just a matter of picking the right words at the right time to look good and give yourself, you know, some assertiveness and power of speak.
Right. And that's the title of your book, and it's a bestseller, and I'm sure it is absolutely a fabulous resource. So Lori, I'm going to just kind of jump right in here, because I want to make sure that we get as much information as we can, because I know you're going to be on here for just 30 minutes, and, you know, if we get some callers, I want to make sure they get their questions answered. But I want to just talk a little bit about, I know you and I had talked a little bit earlier this week and talked about how to date successfully and find Mr. or Miss Right. And then once you're in the relationship, how to complain, apologize, and disagree without being disagreeable and manage those types of issues. So can you just jump right in and talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, the first thing to know is that, you know, where you end up with, whether you end up with, you know, who you think is your Mr. Right or Mr. Wrong, you don't end up with that person by chance. You end up with that person by choice. And they're choices that each of us make in our dating lives, whether we decide to go on a second date with somebody or not, the third date or not, each date is a choice. And when we make smart choices, because we've taken in the information and allowed ourselves to see red flags, like she calls one day and not the next. Oh, I could make an excuse in my head, she was busy, or I could say, you know what, she said she'd call and she didn't. She's irresponsible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can look for the truth in the beginning, or eventually it's going to smack us in the head at the end.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I like the way you said how to complain, apologize, and disagree without being disagreeable, because, you know, there's always going to be a bit of conflict and a bit of, I guess, uncertainty as to how to approach a situation. So, I mean, I know there are proper ways to go about doing it without offending or damaging the relationship,
well,
and I like the way.
The first thing to think about with complaining is, if you can imagine bumping into someone at the office, or if anyone's listening who's single on a date, or your wife or your husband, and this person suddenly, within the first 5 minutes, downloads about 3 complaints, okay? Mm-hmm. My boss is a jerk. The worst thing happened to me today. I hate my mother. I mean, people say these things on dates, on a first date even. You know, they'll say it to a friend. What do? When we get around these people, we run away. We hide. We're busy. We have to go. The phone just rang. I'm sorry. I need to run. I got a meeting. Any excuse we can think of, because we don't want to be in the presence of that kind of negativity. And so what I ask people to do, whether it's through writing or people email me questions about their lives, which people can visit my website at www.smartcomments.com, and feel free to email me questions, and I will answer every one of them. But what people do is they don't realize that in subtle ways they're sending out these negative messages in their dating lives. And what happens later when we get into a relationship is that same habit damages the love, because it's not easy to love someone who's always bringing you problems.
Right.
It's much easier to love someone who's bringing you solutions. Now, I call that a solution-oriented person, and in instant persuasion, I really bring it down to the right way and the wrong way, which is if you want to be a complainer, talk about problems. But if you want to be liked, you talk about the problem, and then you talk about the solution. It's okay to say it's hot, too hot in this room. But if you don't follow up with, so I'm going to run to Home Depot and pick up a fan for us, you know, you go from being the hated complainer to the loved problem solver.
Right, right. Now, Lori, do you believe that what you just described, do you believe that that is what contributes to the romance and the desire fizzling out after a while in a relationship?
Absolutely, because it's about attitude. It's about, if you're not a problem solver, then you're probably creating problems. I mean, you're really one or the other in this world. And if you can think now of certain people you know, put them in one of the two categories. Are they a problem solver or are they a problem finder? Mm-hmm. Who do you like to spend time with? Which one are you? Which one am I? And some days I'm a little bit of each, but I work consciously at knowing and choosing the right words so that I'm a helpful person, that people want to come to me for advice and suggestions. I don't want to be the person who says to friends, oh, no, I don't want to see that movie. Oh, no, I saw that one. No, what do I need to do? I need to offer up a few options of movies I do want to see, right? Mm-hmm. And what happens in a couple's life? Oh, I don't want to eat Chinese food. We just had that last week. Oh, I hate that restaurant down the street. I don't want Italian. And the couple sit there. They have nowhere to go. But what if instead of saying, I don't like this, I don't like that, I don't like this, you say, here's a couple ideas of places I would like to go. You know, now you're contributing to the relationship. You're adding ideas, you're making things easier, and it's just more pleasant for everyone.
Right.
Now, Lori, I want to ask you this, because what you're just describing, there are some situations where it's a very delicate balance. Because, for instance, if you are in a relationship and you are supportive of one another, and the person feels as though they can basically come to you and share those bad things that are going on, how do you handle that situation? Because in many instances, a person becomes accustomed to being able to basically vent or just be able to unload on that partner. And eventually, it's going to take its toll. So how do you speak to those kinds of relationships or those kinds of understandings?
Lori? Hello, Lori, are you there? Uh-oh.
I think we may have lost her.
I think we may have lost her. Well, I'm sure she'll be dialing back in soon. Sometimes we do have phone line issues. I had a few myself just a bit ago. So, actually, that was a very good question, Tony. So I'm sure she will be back shortly. But Lori is, she is very, very busy. I mean, she is an individual that has so many different things going on right now. And I know she, and as I stated, you know, before she came on the line, I had been talking to her about joining me in this joint venture campaign to promote emotional bailout. And she absolutely loves the book. I know she said she loves the book, but I really can appreciate the comment or the procedure and the process that she goes through when you never, ever make a snap decision, because you want to make sure that whatever decision you make, it's going to align with your principles and your projects and exactly what you're doing. So, you know, I really, and I do the exact same thing. I mean, I have to agree with her on that one, because I do the exact same thing, because I am approached from so many different people for so many different projects, and I really have to be very careful that I want to make sure that I strengthen my brand as best that I possibly can. So whoever I associate myself with, as partners, I want to make sure that that I bring the very best that I can bring to my listeners and my clients.
Well, and you know, Kathy, I also love that technique also, because I think the thing that was really great was the fact that you're taking control of the situation. Even though someone tries to basically say, this is what I want you to do, and this, and I need for you to do this, you're still in control, whereas when somebody tries to push you up in against the wall or push you into a corner and make you make a decision right then and there, then they're in control of the situation. So you take back control of the question and the scenario, and give them an opportunity to basically wait on you. And that's really what it's all about, because a lot of times that's where the overbookings come in, or the let's put it this way. Most folks are overstressed because they're being pulled from so many different directions by so many different people, because they are overcommitted, because folks force them into those corners. So I love that technique. I love what you just did.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I just want to also tell the people who may just dialed in, they're listening, or in the chat room, our guest is, actually we have two guests. Our first guest is Lori Pun, and for what, something happened, unfortunately, to Lori's phone, and I'm not sure if this is her trying to dial in now. So, Lori, is that you?
Yes, I'm here. Hello?
Okay. Yeah. Is this Lori?
Yeah, I've been listening to you talk for the last 5 minutes. So I've been here on the line, on the phone, actually, this whole time, just unable to speak.
Okay, because I don't know, something happened, and Tony was in the midst of asking a question,
and
the line dropped.
The only thing I missed out on was about 30 seconds of that question, and then I was back on. But
good. Okay,
yeah.
Good.
So
okay, all right.
If you're repeating that question, I'd be more
Absolutely.
Than happy to answer it.
Yeah, I will. What I was asking, and I'll try to paraphrase a little bit better. I was just asking, a lot of times in a relationship, there's an agreement between the two parties, and those individuals have the agreement that I want to be able to come to you and dump on you, or let loose, or you know, you're the person, my sounding board. And even though you were talking about from the complaint standpoint, how do you handle a delicate situation like that? Because eventually, a person's going to become comfortable knowing that, do you set rules and guidelines? Okay, when I get off work for the first 10, 15 minutes, you can dump. But then we have to come up with some solutions or some times, or we need to go to something else. How do you handle that? Because that's the kind of give and take kind of thing, and it can become overwhelming, I think, in some people's situation if their spouse or their significant other, you know, constantly is complaining, but really that's what they want to have the opportunity to do.
Well, it's not acceptable. I mean, it really means that you have a bad relationship. When one person is complaining to the point at which the other one is feeling suffocated by the trash being thrown on his or her head, you're in the midst of an obstacle, I would put it that way, in the relationship, and something needs to be done about it. Now, if you allow more of that complaining to continue, it just means that the obstacle is going to grow bigger and bigger. And what the couple needs to do then is have a really upfront, serious conversation. And it begins by saying, honey, I love you.
And I'm glad that you feel comfortable sharing all of these points with me. But I'm feeling overwhelmed by it. I'm feeling like more than half of our conversations are revolving around things you're unhappy with. And I'm sorry you're unhappy, but I'm unhappy now too.
Okay.
That's what you have to do. That's where you have to begin. And together, you've got to work out some solutions, whether it means a half hour of dumping, whether it means a real recognition and understanding that perhaps one person is repeating him or herself. Mm-hmm. And so it truly was one complaint rephrased 20 different times.
Yeah, I guess that would be true, yeah.
Right? And so, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and if both parties are committed to making the relationship work, then, like you said, it's obviously something that these complaints keep popping up frequently. It's
That's
something
right.
that you need to sit down and compromise and come up with a workable solution that is agreeable for both parties.
That's true. And many of the complaints may not be about the spouse at all. I mean, it's really
right.
It could be about something else. But you have used your mate as a dumping ground, and unfortunately, you put enough trash there, something's going to start stinking.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's a problem. And the thing to realize is that this is normal. Relationships have obstacles, all do, because none of us are perfect. I mean, if your obstacle is that one of you complains too much, whew, you're lucky.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a good obstacle because it means you're oversharing, okay? So you want to sit down and say, we've got all the ingredients here. We have a great relationship. I love you. I want it to be even better. This is how I'm overwhelmed. Does this make sense to you that I would be overwhelmed?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to start from a place of hope.
Gotcha.
Absolutely.
Gotcha.
Very good question, Tony. And, you know, let me just shift gears here real quick, Lori, because, you know, you've got a lot of great insight, and I just want to make sure I cover both angles, because I know we talked about people in a relationship. Now, what about people that are not in a relationship and they're looking for a relationship, the single people out there who are listening, because I have a lot of single listeners, what is the single most task that someone can do to find the right mate?
The first thing is don't be with the wrong person. And you know who you are who's listening, because if you're having that sinking feeling or that little itch telling you, well, he's great, but he doesn't ever speak to anyone in his family, and he won't explain why. You know, he's great, but when he gets around his friends, he's just not as nice to me. Well, she's great, but, you know, she's kind of selfish. Well, she's great, but sometimes she makes these put-downs in front of other people toward me. See, when there are buts, that's a no. That's a no. And there should be no buts about it when it's right, because dating is the best period you're ever going to have with this person. So if you have buts, get out. And if those buts are things about yourself you're uncomfortable with, then still get out and go work on yourself to figure out how you can be a better person before starting a relationship when you're not at your best. But the whole idea here is that when you're not with that wrong person, you've got to get out and meet as many people as possible. It's a game of numbers. The more you meet, the higher the chance you're going to meet the person who's right for you. So as long as you're out there, whether it's going to advocacy groups, organizations, community events, tell your friends. I mean, you have a power of words here. Tell your friends, I would love to be set up on a blind date. Please think of me if you meet anyone who's like this, this, or this, and say whatever it is that's important to you. But let people know that you're interested and you're available. There's no shame in that. That's wonderful. Be proud of yourself for that. And then be willing to see through people who come to you who aren't really what you want, and don't waste your time there.
And you're absolutely right. I absolutely love your insight in what you just said. And if I could add to that, I think a lot of times, especially, I don't want to pick on females, but sometimes the females that I have been associated with, they kind of self-sabotage their own potential for meeting the right person and having, because they have these beliefs and they convince themselves, oh, this is probably not going to work out, but I'll try it anyway. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, they have these negative thoughts in their head. And if you already go into it with a negative mindset, then you're right. It's probably not going to work.
That's true. And there's more than that. It's probably likely that if they think it's not going to work out, but I'll try it anyway, that means if you ask them why, they could probably list off a few specific things about that guy that has already shown them they're not a man. He's not a man of good character.
Mm-hmm.
And what she's doing is just closing her eyes and hoping that she can land safely here. But the truth is, it's just a big hole. And she can keep her eyes closed, but eventually she's going to fall down, because if he's not a man of character, it will come through in ways of lying and responsibility and ethical behavior. So, you know, yes, you're right. People deliberately blind themselves, and that's why who we end up with most of the time is really by choice, not by chance. And let me remind your listeners again that I'm more than happy to answer questions if they don't feel comfortable calling in. You can reach me through my website at smartcomments.com and my book, which has 35 tips shared through stories of the do's and don'ts of what to say and not say.
Now, Lori, I have a chat room here, so let me type that. Give me that website again. It's
www.smartcomments.com, smartcomments.com. And the book title is Instant Persuasion, How to Change Your Words to Change Your Life.
Excellent.
Because it really is just the small changes in what we say that can make a huge difference. For instance, this is very important for couples. If someone's sharing something with you and you want to give some advice, and many of us have done this, you give your helpful advice, and for some reason, the person goes on attack against you. How do you know what you're talking about? You're not so perfect. And you think, I was just trying to be helpful. Why are you attacking me? Well, here's what happened. It's just word choice. And the difference is, the next time that you want to give advice to someone, before you do, just ask a very smart question. Would you like my opinion?
Right.
And if the person says yes, go for it. And if they say no, well, thankfully, you asked.
Exactly.
Right.
And it's also respectful, because when you seek permission before you speak to give advice, you're respecting that person has the right to decide whether or not to hear it. And that actually opens them up. They're much more likely to want to hear you and to listen to you.
Yeah, and a lot of times because that adds validity to what you're saying, because when a person feels like you have something worthwhile to say, they will let you know that. And asking permission to do that means that if they say yes, you count in their lives. And I guess, you know, that helps any relationship.
That's true. And it even goes back to the question you had earlier about being with someone who complains too much. Part of the point is, you know, I want to listen to you. I don't want to just hear it. I don't want it to go in and out. I want to really listen to you closely. But after 20 minutes of hearing the same complaint, I can't listen anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not really having the kind of conversation I want us to have.
Right. And one thing I wanted to say, Kathy and Lori, and you know me, Kathy, I come up with little phrases and sayings and things like that, but when we were talking about not knowing what you want and having to know that when you're trying to start a relationship or those kinds of things, one thing I wrote down here was, if you don't know what you want, you'll never be able to get what you need. And that's so true.
You won't know when you found it.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, because wanting something is the start to understanding your needs. And a lot of folks, unfortunately, can't recognize their need. I mean, they don't recognize the need simply because of the fact they really don't know what they want. So they get caught up in so many different directions and going in so many different areas and doing the wrong thing. They'll never get to their needs. So I wanted to share that. I hope it made sense.
It's the start. Some people, what they want is attention. What they want is love, and they have a lot of trouble understanding that initial infatuation
you know, it doesn't, love needs nourishment. It needs watering like a flower needs water. And that just because it felt great in the first 3 weeks of the relationship, they think their need was met. But then suddenly in week 4, 5, and 6, you're getting a little less attention and you don't really feel like the priority. And then by week 7, you're wondering, well, is he this guy or is he that guy I met in the beginning? And then by month 4, you're like moving in in the hopes that he'll be what he once was. And, you know, that is just not really getting that love is something that needs nourishment. And you may feel it once, but it disappears unless both people are investing in it constantly. Mm-hmm. And if Absolutely. One is not, get out if you're dating.
Absolutely. Now, Lori, I want to be very respectful of your time, and you were very gracious to offer 30 minutes. So if you do have time to stay on, I will keep your mic open. You were very, very gracious enough to bring in another outstanding expert in the area of relationships, and I'm going to introduce her briefly and then bring her on the line. So would you like to stay on? I'll keep your mic open, or
well,
I can mute
I appreciate the offer very much. I do have to go, but I trust
Oh, no problem.
You will be in great hands with Kimberly Dawn Newman, who's a friend of mine and a terrific relationship expert and author in her own right. So if people do want to refer back to me, as I said, you have my website up, smartcomments.com, and my book is out there on Amazon, and you can learn more about it through my website or can find it in bookstores, and that's Instant Persuasion, How to Change Your Words to Change Your Life. So thank you very much.
And also for you listeners, if you want to contact me, I can make sure I put you in touch with Lori. So, Lori, thank you ever so kindly for giving us this time. You are gracious, very knowledgeable in your area of expertise, and we will be in touch soon.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Thank you, dear. You have a wonderful evening. Now, we are going to go straight into our next guest, Kimberly Dawn Newman, and she is a fabulous individual as well. She's a popular New York City-based writer who frequently covers the dating, relationship, sex beat topics, and her advice articles have been appeared and featured in so many different magazines, entirely too many to even list, Cosmopolitan, Red Book, Maxim, and just so many. She has a quite a bit of work that she does with chemistry.com and match.com, and she has a book, and I am absolutely just chomping at the bit to talk to her about this book and the title of the book. So I'm going to bring Kimberly Dawn on the line. Kimberly, you there?
Oh, hi. Yes, I'm there. I wasn't sure if that was my cue to step in and say hi or not.
Oh, no problem at all. Now, I do hear an echo. Tony, do you hear an echo?
I do hear an echo, and I don't know if that is someone that has their maybe the speakers on or something like that, and we're getting feedback maybe from the speakers. I don't know if there's another line.
Yeah, Kimberly, if you have your sound up listening to the show, you may want to kind of mute the sound. Kimberly? Oh, my goodness. We're just really having time with this. These phone lines.
And we do know sometimes this happens. It has happened before.
It does. It does. For our listeners, it happens occasionally. Yep. And I'm sure she will be back very shortly here. But while we're waiting for Kimberly to come back, this might be her dialing on a different line. And Kimberly, is that you?
Yes, it is. Is that any better? I got kicked off on the other line.
Fabulous.
Yes.
You sound wonderful.
Oh, good. Okay. All of a sudden, it was like, there's an echo, and then I was disconnected. I'm like, uh-oh, let's try something else here.
Yeah, maybe that was your cell phone. Sometimes cell phones are very difficult when we do our show, and we always, you know, try to encourage landlines. But
actually,
it is great.
That was my landline, and now I'm on my cell phone, so who knows?
Are you serious? That
yeah.
is so bizarre. That is so bizarre.
Anyway, where were we?
Well, I am jumping at the bit to have you talk about your fabulous book entitled The Real Reasons Men Commit, Why He Will or Won't Now, you know, there are so many listeners out there that are very anxious to hear you discuss what brought that about. How can a man commit? I mean, what are the reasons men will or won't commit? And what can we do as females?
Right. Well, you know, it was really interesting the way this book came about because I had been writing dating relationship articles for quite a while, and I was approached by Dr. Joel Block, who is a PhD and a relationship therapist, but who is many years older than I am. And he was looking for someone who was still in the trenches to discuss this issue with him, and I think it brought really interesting balance to the book, as did the male-female perspective on the issue. And he had years of clinical experience where I had years of, sadly, still being in the trenches. But it really brought, I think, about a very honest book. And our two perspectives put together, really we zeroed in on some main points that I think are key in the commitment issue with men. One of the big things that the book focuses on is the idea that there is an inherent degree of vulnerability in any intimate relationship. And because men are socialized from a very young age to hate the feeling of being out of control of their emotions, i.e. it might make them appear weak or something else, they tend to absolutely abhor that feeling that kicks in when they start to get close to someone in a relationship, and they may not even be cognizant of what's going on, but suddenly as they get closer and closer, they start feeling more vulnerable, and then they might start hearing abort signals, get out of the relationship, when actually they were quite happy, but it was their vulnerability and their fear of losing that control or the fear of appearing weak that made them suddenly think, I got to bolt, I got to get out of here. So we coined that phrase vulnerophobia, and I think it's a really interesting concept because I know certainly anyone in an intimate relationship starts to feel vulnerable. I think that kicks in with females as well, but I think that when you look at how we're raised, little girls are allowed to be vulnerable or appear more vulnerable, and it's okay, even from the earliest times on the playground. You know, mm-hmm. if you look at a situation and say you're playing soccer, it could be boys or girls this day and age, but it's more likely that a little girl that fell and got injured would be consoled, tears wiped off, told, okay, now get back in the game, whereas a boy would probably be like, it's okay, brush it off, let's go, you know, no tears. And it sets it up from a very early age that they're not supposed to look vulnerable. Of course, it's a generalization, and there are exceptions to every rule, but I think the vulnerophobia idea really hits on a key point in the commitment issue.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. So do you feel that males, more so than females, are just kind of maybe afraid to...
To take the leap?
Well, not take the leap, but just kind of afraid to give away the control of their feelings.
I think that makes them uncomfortable frequently, and that ties in with the, yes, they might have a harder time showing emotion and giving away their feelings, where women are taught to deal with their emotions on face value. So, but that can also bite women in the, backside if they take that to an extreme, which is another point we discuss in the book, that a woman who is incredibly understanding of a man's commitment issues may not be any more likely to find Mr. Right, because by making excuse after excuse after excuse for him, like, you know, he can't commit right now because his dog is sick or his car isn't working
right. He has different issues in his life, and I just want to try to, you know, wait it out or that type
exactly.
of thing.
Exactly. But unfortunately, a lot of women in so doing, we termed this pathological empathy. And I know I'm guilty, man. I've definitely done that before. I'm like, well, you know, he had a tough time growing up and whatnot, but it may not further...
Right.
the cause towards commitment by making these excuses, then the guy really never has an impetus to commit.
Does the woman need to take a stand?
I wouldn't say take a stand, and ultimatums rarely work. That's another
thing. Well, not an ultimatum, but just a stand in that she gets a little bit more assertive, not aggressive, but assertive, and say, now I really need to, you know, tell me how I can help you open up. And let me know what is preventing you from making a commitment, what are the barriers, what are the obstacles, and together we can overcome them, something like that.
I would think that might scare a guy to death if you put it out there that blatantly. I would say, yes, it would be wonderful to have that kind of open communication, and if you find a man who's willing to discuss that, fantastic. But I think some of the better ways of approaching it are by example. So by being very open with your partner and encouraging sharing of your daily life and then asking questions and getting your lives more intertwined, that starts to allow them to feel more comfortable with the vulnerability that comes along with being close to someone. Mm-hmm. Another really good way of doing it is exposing a man to happy couple situations. I think that people forget that so frequently. There's, you know, the swing and single life and whatnot. But if you're in a committed relationship and you want to move it towards something more serious, I think that going out with other couples that are extremely happy and committed can help assuage some of the fear that, you know, my life will be over when I commit. I mean, that is one of the big things that a lot of men that we spoke to came up with. They have this fear that they're giving something up by committing. And the irony is, the flip side is, women see commitment as freedom. So you're dealing with that setup right away. For a woman, she actually may feel more secure and like she's not giving anything up, but she's actually gaining by getting in a committed relationship. But a lot of men, unfortunately, see it as, well, that's the end of my time as, you know, doing what I want. And obviously there are concessions in any relationship. Any relationship is work. But the man that is moving towards a committed place is able to recognize that he can still have his life, but what he gains from the commitment may far outweigh what he is perceiving that he's giving up.
Now, Kimberly, let me ask you this, because what you just said is very insightful, and I want to elaborate on that a bit. Do you think it may have something to do, as far as men, you know, being reluctant to commit? Because men, as a whole, they just tend to judge their self-worth on their successes. Do you think it has something to do with the fear of failure, maybe?
I do think that could actually be a very potent motivator in, you know, running from commitment. One of the studies that I remember that we wrote about in the book discussed that men tend to not want to make a mistake also because they're very afraid of the financial ramifications of making a mistake, which I thought was very interesting. So they tend to want to be very, very sure before they get married, because they're putting so much focus on their professional life, and suddenly they're like, well, what if it doesn't work out, and then I have to give away half my income or something. And I thought that was a really interesting point, that they're looking at it from an economic viability standpoint as well. But I do think there was also, men tend to be less frequently the ones who will initiate a divorce. So I would agree also that fear of failure that you hit on absolutely ties in there, because men tend not want to make to not want to make a mistake, and not that women do either. God knows, I don't think any woman goes into a committed relationship thinking, oh well, if it gets divorced, oh well. But men definitely, in studies, have been shown to have a bigger fear of it failing, and therefore perhaps they're even being a little more careful with making that commitment. Now, that said, women also have the biological clock issue, which, like it or not, may factor into the thought process of many females, and that may also facilitate them jumping into committed relationships before perhaps it was the best time.
But I think
that's a really good point with the failure. I'm sorry, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, so what do you say to the woman who has run into man after man after man, who has basically a phobia for one reason or another, and it seems like that's the routine. What does that woman do? I mean, does she look at herself differently, or does she go into a different pool? How should she address those kinds of scenarios? Because I know women that she's been in relationships with these guys, and these guys seem to have different qualities, but they always seem to get to a point and it stops. For one reason or another, the relationship stops. And a lot of times people will tell you, well, if something happens, you have to start taking a look at yourself versus taking a look at the other person. So how do you get that woman to say, well, it's not really me. There really are things that these guys need to do and maybe change their focus or change what they're looking at.
Well, I do think it's possible for women to self-sabotage and end up choosing a certain type of man repeatedly that they might just be inherently attracted to, but that may not be the best choice for commitment. The bottom line, you know, with commitment and men that are ready to commit is they have to be ready to commit. So trying to force a man to commit is not going to help move them forward either. But I think that women that complain that all the good guys are taken and that, you know, they end up with the leftovers and the ne'er-do-wells or something like that, they're definitely not going to help themselves out either. Or someone who acts like their date is an addictive substance rather than, you know, breaking up and moving on and accepting that a relationship may not be what she's looking for long-term is important. I also think that some women fall into the trap of being too perfectionistic, that no matter how terrific he is, she's convinced the next guy will be better. And there is something to think about the fact that a lot of people pass on happy, committed relationships that might have been 95% perfect in holding out for the, you know, the doctor who has washboard abs and something else, or vice versa, the men that are looking for the Playboy playmate neurosurgeon. And I think that that's something to keep in mind as well. But it is important that, you know, while female empowerment and pop culture may have something to do with a woman's decision to, you know, to think she can hold out for what she wants or skirt the commitment issue, it might actually be her real life that has her talking herself out of relationships. And so if she's taken a bunch of hits or keeps attracting the same kind of man, it would behoove her to look at, okay, what are the traits that I actually value in a partner and perhaps reassess.
Gotcha. Right. Gotcha.
Now, Kimberly, I want to just switch gears here a little bit because I have a really, really important question. I actually watched Dr. Phil today, and this was his topic on his show. And I have received a couple of emails because whenever I have my Women's Relationship Wednesday series, I always get emails from people with questions. And so here's the question, because it really kind of spurred me to go ahead and ask this because I was reluctant to ask it, but I'm going to go ahead and ask it. Is it okay, this is related to sex in a relationship, in a committed relationship, is it okay, is it a good thing or is it detrimental to the relationship? Because men are very visual, for men to fantasize about sex with other females that they know or don't know or whatever.
Okay, well, this is interesting because this ties into the second book that I wrote recently that was released in May, and it's Sex Comes First, 15 Ways to Save Your Relationship Without Leaving Your Bedroom.
Oh, yeah,
and
I saw that.
Yes, and so it's dealing with, basically, we took 15 couples' issues, discuss how you could deal with them verbally, and then pair them with a corresponding sexual experience about how you can solidify the work you've already done verbally in a physiological way. And one of the issues in that book actually was about fantasies and sharing fantasies. Now, it's a very slippery slope, pun intended with that one intentionally, but it's sometimes can be beneficial to a relationship as far as enhancing the trust of the relationship or dealing with jealousy. You know, it's not something that you want to bring up and be like, well, I'm having fantasies about doing the barista at Starbucks. That's probably a little more specific than someone needs. But in actually opening up and sharing the kinds of fantasies a person might have, it allows a couple to deal with jealousy in and out of the bedroom in a constructive way as long as they're both open to the discussion and not threatened. So I personally don't think it's necessarily bad to have some fantasy introduced into the bedroom situation. It also may make you cognizant of the very real person you have in front of you if you have these discussions outside of the bedroom and recognize that there were many qualities in that person to which you were attracted as well. But I'm curious, what did Dr. Phil say?
Well, no. Dr. Phil didn't. That question wasn't raised on Dr. Phil's show.
Gotcha.
His show was about sex. It was about the benefits of having more sex because in this economy, you know, we're really struggling with our stress levels. And he was just saying that you need to incorporate more sex. But I was just coming from a question that had been posed to me. And when I saw Dr. Phil's show today, I said, maybe I should just go ahead and ask that question. But so I just want to make sure I understand what you just said so I can, you know, I want my listeners to be clear.
Right.
There are advantages for sharing your fantasies with your partner, but you should not share specific people that you're fantasizing. Like you wouldn't want to tell your partner, hey, sweetheart, you know, I have been having these huge fantasies about George Clooney, and you know, I just really would fantasize about George Clooney doing this and that, but that's a no-no. But if you could tell your partner, you know, I've always had a fantasy about doing this, or I've always had a fantasy about wanting to experiment with this, that's a good thing.
It can actually free up the communication within a couple. I definitely think there are positives to that. And even, you know, sharing that George Clooney might be the top of your list of five would not be as detrimental probably as fantasizing that, you know, your child school principal or the UPS guy or somebody that's actually accessible.
I got you. Somebody that you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
George Clooney is a little less accessible and a little less likely to happen. Jackman is top of my list of five anytime, anywhere. Well, I did actually see him at the swimming pool the other day and was like, oh, my God, there he is. But he was with his family, and so it wasn't an issue.
So you wouldn't want to say, you know, I have this huge fantasy about your best friend.
Yeah, I think that would be a terrible idea.
Got it.
You know, discussing the kinds of things that you might find, or even role-playing scenario, and having the openness and trust and communication with a partner can definitely help bring you closer. So I think
not judge, no matter
absolutely.
How strange.
Yes. No judgment. There has to be
no matter how strange it sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly. Right.
And
no
it doesn't
matter,
mean
strange.
You have to do it. It doesn't mean you have to do it. Obviously, both people have to be comfortable with a fantasy before it's enacted. But there must be, before they're sharing of fantasies, there must be the agreement between the partners that there will not be judgment.
Absolutely.
And so sharing that you're, you know, you think your mother-in-law is hot or something, yeah, probably not. But, but other things could definitely help. You know, you don't want something that your partner is then going to go, ew, don't touch me, because that's going to ruin the entire reason for it. But there's another really interesting point I was going to make, too, with the sex issue, is that it ties into commitment, too. A lot of women confuse the fact that if they're in a sexual relationship, they think, well, okay, that's commitment, he's committed. But there's sometimes a difference in the thought processes of men and women. A lot of times men equate sex with sex, and women equate sex with commitment, but there's also the hormonal thing that kicks in. And people forget this. When you get in an intimate, close situation, oxytocin kicks in. And that's a love drug. And it can make you feel feelings for someone that you might not have felt had you not jumped into bed with them. So I think it's something to definitely be aware of. If you're suddenly in a relationship and you're feeling feelings for someone completely inappropriate for you, you might want to remind yourself that there are other things, pheromones and oxytocin hormones and things that could also be muddling your clear thought. Just something that I thought might be interesting to throw in there.
That's a very good point. And that's why I'm not a relationship expert, but as a life coach and a career consultant, sometimes that comes up in my life coaching sessions about relationships. And I always try to advise my clients against, you know, just, try to just get to know the person first before you launch into an intimate relationship with them, because you want to understand the person that you're becoming involved with.
Absolutely.
Because you're right. I mean, once you make that change to intimacy, all those other hormones and things kick in, and they mess up your wise judgment. You know, they
absolutely can throw you for a loop.
Yeah.
And suddenly, yep. Like I said, Mr. Inappropriate is looking like Mr. Right, and then you've wasted who knows how much time with someone that actually wasn't right, that you were just, you know, confusing the wonderful love feelings and the hormone drugs, really, is what they come out being, with,
and,
you know, some kind of affection. Go ahead, sorry.
I was just going to say, and Kimberly, the one thing that you did say that I, you know, since we are talking about this, one thing that you did bring up that is very important to remember is that, and a lot of folks don't remember this, but men and women think differently when it comes to the intimacy in many instances. And
absolutely.
A guy will think different, and it means differently to him than it does to that woman in many cases. Now, it's great when it's the same because you can tell it's the same, but when...
Yeah.
That's why you always hear the conversation about, well, why won't he call me? I mean, he doesn't call me, and I really thought he cared about me and those kinds of things, or he's disappeared or that kind of thing. And it was just the two of you were thinking differently about what that moment meant.
Absolutely.
Right.
I think that's a really, really important thing to keep in mind, because sex might just be sex in some situations to someone, where it might mean something very different to someone else. And that's one of those things to keep in mind before you put yourself in that situation.
Yeah. Oh, especially nowadays.
Oh, absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I named the title of this show tonight, it's a Women's Relationship Wednesday series, but I named the title Listening with Both Eyes.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah. Because you absolutely have to be totally in tune with, first of all, what you want, just like Tony said. You have to know what you want, because how are you going to know you found it if you don't know what you want?
Right. And honestly, not every woman is looking for commitment, and that's something that should
right.
be discussed and looked at, too. You know, I mean, we have the book, The Real Reasons Men Commit, but I was really careful to write that into the book, and that Chapter 9 is about making sure that you're ready to commit, too, because it's a two-way street, and it's not always just the woman pushing for commitment. So that's
absolutely.
Something to keep in mind as well. But the book
now,
definitely...
Kimberly,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, we're running down on our last few minutes,
uh-huh.
and I want to put your website. You are kdneumann.com?
Correct, and that's NEUMANN.com, which, you know,
okay.
it's an unusual spelling, so.
Okay.
Everybody always wants to go N-E-W, and that's not it. And then I also have websites with the two books. It's realreasonsmencommit.com. And there's a commitment quiz on there if people are interested in taking it. It's a true-false quiz, and they can find out the commitment potential of someone they might be seeing, which is very interesting.
And I'm going to ask you, Kimberly, do you offer counseling after they take this test?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then sexcomesfirst.com is the second book, which I still can't believe I got that, Earl. It's like, somebody didn't take that? You've got to be kidding me.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Kimberly, we're coming up on our last 60 seconds, and oh, my God, it has just been absolutely fabulous. I would love to bring you back for a full show.
I would love that. I can chat your ear off, I promise.
Yes, I mean, you've given so much great information. I know I am going to get flooded with email notes and comments about everything that you have said. So thank you ever so kindly for jumping in at the last minute, because I know this was, just not planned, and we just kind of
right.
threw it together. So I really appreciate your flexibility and your understanding. So thank you so much. You are very
you
knowledgeable.
You're so welcome.
Yes, and I will definitely be in touch with you so we can schedule you back in and just have you for a full hour.
Great. And also, I did have some books sent to you, hopefully, so some of your readers can
enjoy a
giveaway.
Thank you so much for saying that. Yes, Kimberly has been gracious enough to offer some books. We're going to be giving those away. So please go to my website. All the listeners, go to my website under my radio show topic tab and sign up because I know you're going to want this fabulous book. So thank you for the reminder, and I will also post it on my website that you will be giving away a couple of books for your promotion.
Great. Well, thank you so much for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, and we are going to sign off for now. I'm Kathy Holloway-Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
And we will see you same time next week. Good night, everyone.